Okay, welcome back, everyone, to our second episode of 2S, the Horror Quarters podcast. I'd like to welcome in Jonathan, also known as Mr. Death Breath on YouTube.
Yeah.
Movie reviews, and check him out, and I'll put up the graphic. And then another filmmaker friend of mine, Paul Steven Edwards. Thanks for coming.
Hello. Nice to be here.
So, it's been a couple of months since I was able to get the second episode off the ground, so apologize to my three viewers that watch it, but you know, we're back. And so what's going on, Jonathan?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you, man. Thanks for coming way out. Talk to us about your channel and stuff and how that kind of derived and what inspired that and things.
I like watching movies. I like complaining about movies, so I decided to make a channel about it. And I do spoiler-free movie reviews and sometimes celebrity interviews when I'm able to.
Okay.
So yeah.
And you recently went to the one of the Lost Boys filming locations,
right? Yeah. I went to, I think it's in Santa Clarita. I think it's called like Trestles Trailhead.
Okay.
And it's right there where they shot the whole bridge scene.
Okay. Is that one of your favorites?
Oh, it's one of my favorite movies. I even have a Lost Boys-inspired tattoo. I don't know if you can see it on the camera, but it says Lost with the Empire Fangs.
Okay,
so
cool.
I'm a huge fan. Why it's my childhood, man. I remember when I was like maybe 9 or 10 years old, I found a Maxwell tape with the tape rolling off, like the tape that says the name. It's the Lost Boys vampire. I popped it in, and I've seen it more times than I can count. I can quote the movie, and I can't even watch the movie anymore because I know it so well that it's actually kind of boring to watch.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Paul, I've worked with Paul a couple of times.
We first worked together. What was the first thing we did together?
Repair?
Oh my goodness.
What, right? Repair.
Yeah, I think so.
That's when I met you through Kirk.
I think so. Yeah, the short film that I did that was about it was about the second American Civil War veteran. I wish that one were a little less timely than it is now, but that was a lot of fun. Yeah, we shot that on a Canon T2i.
That's right.
Back in the day. And
yeah.
Then we worked together on Grey, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Grey was, it was a huge learning experience. But,
you guys did a good job.
I actually
watched it on Amazon. It was very good.
Thank you.
And I like the mask. It's iconic. Dude, it's scary.
Yeah, we did get somebody to make that. So that was cool. But to me, Grey was missing a lot of stuff. But a lot of things were out of our control, be fair.
But again, as a learning experience, I mean, how many people, you know, get to even, like, experience that? You know, see a movie through from beginning to end and actually say at the end of it, hey, we made this.
Yeah.
For me, that was the first, like, big project that I ever completed. And that was huge for me. I think it opened up pretty much every door afterwards for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... by any means am I shitting on anybody involved with it. I put all that on me. You know what I mean? As far it's all on me as far as the miscomings or shortcomings, however you want to put it.
Oh yeah, the creator always has a different relationship with the product than the people who watch it, for sure.
But yeah, everyone that was part of that, man, I appreciate it, cuz you guys were I mean, we filmed on Mother's Day, I remember. We were out there in the ranch and
We had pretty much every animal imaginable.
Sure.
Where'd you guys film that?
Across the stage.
Paris.
Out in Paris, really, really cool location. If people who haven't seen the movie, go see the movie. But there's a beautiful, like, Western town, a 3/4 scale, right?
Yeah,
Western town.
Sure. That
was
I filmed
built
there
on the property
one time.
Right,
I was doing
right.
this like goth short thing where
probably.
I was acting at a point, and I filmed there. I filmed in that the saloon, and they ended up decking it out with lights and putting hooks to make it look like it was a suspension thing.
I mean, great location.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah,
and you know, we really did, you know, we didn't have a lot, but I think that we did make the most of what we had, you know.
Paris, California, by the way.
Yeah, not Paris. not Paris.
Taking a plane France. To France.
Still haven't done. Or Paris, Texas, either.
Oh, yeah, there's Paris, Texas?
Good movie, man. Good movie.
Okay.
If you ever, Wim Wenders, one of the great, great film directors, did a movie called Paris, Texas.
I'll check it out.
Just awesome.
Good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if there isn't enough reasons to visit, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house is out there, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Check that out, huh? I'd like to get there one day.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Paul wrote a screenplay titled Blue Room that he was kind enough to allow me to direct. And if I remember correctly, was the walls in this house, did that help inspire that script?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote that story for this location because of the blue of the house, the blue of the light, and I wanted, you know... At that time, I think that was the Blackmagic camera had just come out. And I wanted to shoot something on it.
We ended up shooting
on yours, right?
Right.
Because, but I wrote it for the camera and for the house, and we ended up not using the camera, but using the house.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that, you know, that script, what I guess what, well, being blue, that kind of pulled me into it, but just the simplicity of the script as far as locations and what the story was. There was, what, one, two, three?
Three characters. Three characters, you know, really one primary location, but, you know, little rooms within that location. And, you know, and it's a simple noir, you know. Noir is always fun to play with, you know. It's simple character dynamics, you know. People want what they want. People, you know, double cross each other, you know. You're never sure of whose alliances are with who. And, you know, I think noir is a fun place to play with that.
Did you, when it was all, when it was finished, is that what you envisioned, or was there something, was there a different tone that you were looking for?
No, it was.
Did I fail you?
No, dude. I mean, honestly, it was really close to what I envisioned in my head when I was writing it.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, the characters were different because when I first wrote it, I had, you know, different people in mind, but, you know, the people that you cast in there, in some cases, were probably even more suited for the role than who I had in my mind when I wrote it.
Okay. And they were all troopers, too, man. They, well, yikes, man. They were crawling on the ground, tied up.
A lot of blood, too. Yeah.
A ball gag in the mouth.
Jeez. There are some running themes in my work.
Yeah. Sure. Can you just send me a link to that? I want to see that. You work on a lot on the mazes and stuff, right?
I've been working in a couple of capacities for Underground Haunt in Los Angeles, and also for the on the, you know, more mainstream end of things, I've also worked for immersive activations for promoting movies such as Godzilla.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So, Jonathan, do you try and stick to horror reviews, or do you kind of broaden it out? Because I don't really see, I mean, I see a lot of horror, but I mean, what do you try to stick to? Is it horror just inspires you more?
I love horror. I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, I don't sound funny, but that's kind of the core of who I am. You know, always, I mean, as we go, I've always been into like darker things as people, and just you gravitate towards. So I love it, but I'm also just a cinephile in general.
Okay.
I just try to avoid kid movies because I don't find them interesting at all.
Right.
So, you know, but yeah, mostly horror, but any movie that looks interesting enough, I'll definitely review it.
Okay. Cool, man. And then, so what makes you go get these interviews from these celebrities, man? Because that takes little balls to bother. You know, for me, I get kind of like, hey, I don't want to bother this guy, you know, and I don't know. But you seem to be pretty successful in that, you know, Scout Taylor Compton and I think Tyler Mayne.
Yeah.
That was at the last Monsterpalooza, right?
No, it was Halloween 40.
Halloween 40. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
That was cool, by the way. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, first and foremost, like, you know, all glory to God because he opens the doors for me. But what it comes down to is I'm just a big dork. Like, you know, I'm reviewing him and I get to put him on my channel, but I'm just excited to be able to, to be able to talk to them, you know? Right. So when I'm asking these questions, I'm kind of like, oh my gosh, you're Paul Steven Edwards. It's because I'm excited about what Paul Steven Edwards has done.
That's literally the only time that anyone's ever said that.
Well, okay, I do want to say, Paul Steven Edwards does some amazing films. You made that film about the guy with the killer video game, which I thought was amazing.
Polybius.
Yeah, Polybius. Yeah, I don't remember the name, but I remember when I finished it, I was just like, oh, the way it ends, just guys, check it out. Check out his channel, Paul Steven Edwards.
I was there for that.
That was awesome. That, and the way it ends, the guy's like, let's just do it. So basically, he's just like, it's just, but anyway, it just, I'm a fan. I'm a dork. I love horror movies. I love movies. I mean, not saying anything I shouldn't say, but James McAvoy in Split, if I could interview him, I would go nuts, and I'm going to definitely try to interview him, because that guy should get all the Oscars the way he acts. It's just I'm a big dork. That's why I talk to them. Okay. I geek out. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always fun. One of the nice things about the rise of the internet and the convention culture and everything like that is that you actually do have the chance to, for better and for worse, to interact with people who you admire and whose work you're looking at. One of my favorite Comic-Con moments ever was when very early on, before it really blew up and Hollywood took over, I got to hear Dave McKean talking about the making of Mirror Mask to one of his friends, illustrator, I think it was Bill Sienkiewicz he was talking with. So about an hour, they talked about just how it was making this movie and putting it together and the process of how he did it, you know, and it was just two friends talking to each other, and I got to sit in and listen in on that, and that was just incredibly invaluable to me. Just super inspiring, because it made me realize, hey, you know, you can go out and do this, and you can do it at a really great level if you really apply yourself.
Yeah, it's surreal. I got to sit, I was getting his autograph, but I sat next to Yaphet Kotto from the original Alien, and I got to talk to that man about not only alien, but you know, his role in Homicide: Life on the Streets. And yes. He was, you know, he was conversing with me. I was like, yes. Man, you were brilliant in Homicide: Life on the Street. And you know, mm-hmm. to talk back and forth, same with Dick Warlock about, you know, how I told him how he moved in Halloween 2. Nothing against Nick Castle, who was great too, but I thought Dick Warlock just kind of became the heir, man, just kind of mm-hmm. just glided with,
yeah, that's right,
you know, with that. And you know, he actually conversed with me on and, you know, how that came about and stuff, so that was interesting.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these actors do all sorts of non-genre work. You know, one of the, I think Herbert Jefferson Jr. from Battlestar Galactica, he's at okay. every convention, everything. But I mean, he made a movie back as Detroit, I want to say Detroit 9000.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't yeah. that? It's just a brilliant heist movie.
Yeah.
If you look at it, it's super well put together. All these people, you know, who are our genre fans, you know, all of our, you know, who we look up to, they do work outside of all of that too. Right. And like, I love being able to be with them and recognizing that work outside of genre stuff. Have you seen Escape Room yet?
I loved Escape Room. Yes. I loved it. Cause you know what it reminded me of? I'm glad you mentioned that. Cause when people ask me questions like that, I forget everything. I was like, I can forget my name. I wouldn't know. Yeah. But it reminded me of like the combination of Cube. Like fucking yes. the first yeah, Cube yeah, yeah. meets Saw, but without like the glorified, not that I care, but without the excessive gore and mm-hmm. without the convoluted plot line that takes place after the third movie.
Sure, sure.
And it reminded me of like the marriage of both of them in its own little unique package, and yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, I always love the genre of, subgenre of like the random group of people who have been thrown together yeah. and, you know, they need to work together, come together as a team to work their way out of the situation. And this was a really nice take on that. Yeah, exactly. The visuals were really solid.
It was like, fun.
All the way from the beginning. There wasn't too much backstory on any of the characters. You know, I mean, you were pretty much given everything you needed, like, right into that. You didn't know exactly who to trust, you know. You had some really great performances. And the sequence that I loved, the upside down room, man.
Oh, that was awesome, dude.
The upside down room was one of the best, like, action horror sequences that I can remember in like recent years.
You know what I enjoyed was when they were in the Arctic area, because usually with these kind of movies they don't get creative like that. Like they keep it to a dingy room, or like, you know, like you know, in Saw, like all their rooms are always kind of the same, like this industrial room.
Yeah.
But when they put the ice there and you see the wall, they really put money into it.
Yes.
And this kind of like, did you see Jigsaw?
I did.
Okay, I was super. I was very disappointed because I expected it to be like, you know, the second coming of the franchise, but instead it was more of the continuation of the same.
Sure.
And I feel like Escape Room could have essentially been a Saw movie, like a backdoor Saw movie, if they tacked it in without it being convoluted.
I feel, you know, look, the Saw movies have sort of run their course.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's time for something new, and I feel like Escape Room is like the new thing. I will definitely go back to the sequel to Escape
Room. Oh yeah, definitely.
I will go back. You know, and if that keeps me hooked, I'll go back after that. I really, really enjoyed, I knew I would like it, but I didn't realize that, like, it would have, like, so many great visual sequences that would, like, I mean the trippy, you know, the drug room, you know, like,
that was great.
The visuals in
and
that
it was
room
funny, just, too, while being exciting and not, it made you feel nauseous a little bit, too, the way they were doing everything.
I mean, for me, that was, like, the biggest surprise of, like, I knew a lot about it going in to it, just because I know some of the people involved with it, you know. But like, as with anything, any sort of upcoming project, I always do my best to stay away from any kind of spoiler.
Yeah,
it's
same.
Hard. It's That's so smart. Hard. It is so hard to like go into these things unspoiled, you know.
You go to the movie theater and there's the trailer you've been trying to avoid for the last 3 months.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, every time.
But what was really cool about this one is that, like, even though I knew some things would be happening, like, I'd known that there would be an upside-down room. I'd known that, like, I would see this other thing. The way it was presented was so surprising for me that actually it sort of, like, the spoilers actually made it better.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that.
Okay, I ended up seeing an advanced screening. Does it end the same way?
I don't know how did yours end.
They end up showing that the organization is trying to catch them and plan a plane crash at the end.
Yes.
Okay, I feel like they could have cut that out, had them just go, we're going to Paris, and then put that sorry, put that as an end credit thing, because I felt like it went too long and it was unnecessary, and it would have worked better tacked on mid credits.
Yeah,
because they could have just ended it there.
Yeah, I can see the.
And that's like really the only error I have there. Because I'm like, it went too long.
But at the same time, I also really enjoyed the sudden rush of energy at the end with the wait, what's going on here? You know, we've got a plane crash going, and then you see that it's a simulation. And it pulls you out. And I'm sorry if I'm spoiling Escape Room.
No, it's been out for like a month at this point. So,
but yeah, okay, go see Escape Room. Yeah, because I think for me that was definitely sort of the horror surprise. It was the first movie I saw this year, and I think it got everything off to a really good start.
Yeah, can I blast some shoutouts really quick?
Yeah, man, go right ahead. Quick.
Okay, so shout out to some of my friends, Infernal Imagery. They did my Lost Boys shirt, incredible stuff. Death of Absolution Co., the shirt I'm wearing, Beetlejuice shirt, amazing. Scary Cat Vasquez, he knows everything about Hauntalk. You should talk to him. He's a big fan. Have everything. Toei Eerie does amazing stickers, coming out with great horror shirts. Slashes and Stitches, horror pillows, dolls. Tomorrow Comes Movies podcast talks everything. Comic, movies, Funko is incredible. Artist Sammy Ruiz, amazing artist that does Tim Burton-inspired artwork and also incredible musician. Contrary Dame does amazing custom jewelry. And Monsters Under Your Bed, who does custom clothing. And also, thank you so much to Horror Share and to SubCal Soul Culture Hustler for always sharing my stuff. Thanks for your support, guys.
Yeah, cool, man. I'll have you send me all that, and I can.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Up. You know, we were talking about Slender Man.
Yes.
Earlier, Slender Man. You were a little disappointed on it.
Slender Man. I saw because I have the AMC pass.
Oh, you know, nice.
The one where you pay $20 bucks a month.
The stubs.
Stubs. So you can see up to three movies a week, and which is nice. It's really let me take a chance on movies that I ordinarily wouldn't see. Slender Man was, you know, it was obviously a low budget effort, you know. It was shot on the A7S II, which was...
I didn't know that. That's cool.
I believe it was credited in the end of the credits on there. So it was the first picture that I had seen in the theatrically, you know, that was shot on A7S II. You know, and I thought it looked good, but the problem that I have is like that. And the problem that everybody assumes with cameras, and this is just like a camera complaint here, is that people always ask, well, how is it in low light, you know? Is it a good low light camera? And even if you've got a great low light camera, you still have to light the movie, you know?
Yeah,
you got to light your movie, because like that's how you're telling the story, is with the light. And and I felt like there were too many places where I just couldn't see the actors' faces. Like in the middle of very dramatic moments, you know, their faces would just be completely obscured, and that you know, took me out of the moment.
Yeah.
But I was actually really surprised with how well they were able to put together, you know, a narrative. It's not the Slender Man movie I think I would have made if I were, you know, hired to make a Slender Man movie, but like what they did with it, I thought was unique, and you know, I give them props for getting it out to the market for sure.
Yeah, because and that's a good point about the low light subject. It doesn't mean, in my opinion, you know, to be lazy. Now I have this camera, and I don't. You still need to light it.
Oh yeah, I'm just going to shoot everything with like practical and available. Yeah,
right. And Kirk actually told me you make your horror movie later. In other words, you light the shit or the way you need it to look, and then you make it in post, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's interesting that's angle. Interesting. So I'll have to watch Slender Man again and take a look at that. I didn't go in expecting too much on it, so I probably wasn't let down. Like going in to see Halloween 2018, I was expecting so much, and maybe that was my own fault. But
you and everyone else, though, you know? That was that movie where it's like, what are they going to possibly do to make it awesome? And it had so far to fail that, yeah. I mean, it's not exactly surprising that it wasn't as good as it could have been.
Everyone loved it. Most people loved it. But
I enjoyed it. I feel wrong about my review about it, because I feel like I gave it a glowing review. And if I go back on it now that I've really thought about it and let the hype wear down and fully digest it, it was good, but it wasn't great.
And, you know, Chris Stuckman, I don't know if you watch his reviews. We actually pretty much agreed on everything, because he was like, man. It had so much potential, and if you're such a huge fan of certain movies, you're going to go in a little more picky, I think.
Yeah, it's hard for a franchise to make a franchise, really, honestly, because it's so hard to please, you know, the whole fan base, and you really can't. So in the end, you just sort of have to go in and make the movie that you're going to make, and hope that it resonates with people and, you know, makes them feel something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
I would like to see your version of Slender Man. Because, I mean, honestly, and this is a compliment, Polybius was better than Slenderman on every level. Like, to hate that movie is an understatement. Whatever was worse than hate, because Polybius was awesome.
Well, thank you.
And I would love to see what you would do with Slenderman. Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the main things with Slenderman, I feel like the movie that has sort of illustrated the whole Slenderman thing, scary issue, has already been made, and that was Heavenly Creatures, man.
I've never seen that.
Heavenly Creatures is Peter Jackson's movie that he made, I believe, right after... gosh, what? I'm sorry. I'm going back. No, he made it... Pre-Frighteners, I want to say? Or is it right after Frighteners? But, I mean, it's... Honestly, it's the story of two girls who develop an unhealthy relationship with each other. You know, they develop their own fantasy world that they live in, and, you know, the consequences of this relationship, you know, sort of echo out. It's based on a true story. To me, when I hear of Slenderman, that makes me think of the actual killing that happened,
you know,
with the girls who,
right.
You know, and I feel like a movie in that vein that really got into the heads of the girls who were inventing Slenderman and who were, you know, possessed, you know, sort of in by, that would have been a far more interesting movie. And again, Heavenly Creatures sort of already made that, you know, so that's, I guess if I were going to remake it, I would go more that direction.
So they like Slenderman, basically.
Yeah.
Years before.
It's interesting. If you see enough movies, life and art like always imitate each other,
right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And, I feel like with Slenderman, what's more scary to me than Slenderman is the idea that someone could believe Slenderman's real.
Yeah.
You know? And that's happened. So for me, that if I were making a horror movie, that tends to be the way that I go. Most of my horror things that I enjoy, things that I go with, they're not supernatural in tone. You know, most of my the movies that really scared me the most, even if they have a supernatural element, they're very, very toned back, like The Haunting, I think probably my favorite one that's just overtly supernatural is Mario Bava's Black Sunday. You know,
I've never seen that.
The best opening to a horror movie, in my opinion, like, and of course I realize I saw this when I was, I think, 6 or 7 years old for the first time, but the beginning of that movie is just mind-blowing, and a masterpiece of mood and just throwing you into like a nightmare right away.
Okay, so M. Night Shyamalan's back.
Yes.
Woo!
Yeah. He's back. We were talking about Signs earlier, man. One of your favorites of his?
Yeah, I'd say Signs probably is my favorite Shyamalan movie.
Yeah. Was it the simplicity? Again, I love that kind of, you know, farm, couple of characters, whatever, 3, 4, you know, the sheriff and all that. But I mean, just the simplicity and to make a story flow within that, to me, was very nice. I like to touch with, you know, with the corn stalks and the field.
Yeah, they actually grew that. They took like, I think, the 6 months to grow it all.
Sure.
You believe that? It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then they donated it when they were done.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think, Paulie?
Yeah, I think visually it's scary. You know, cornfields are scary. Children of the Corn, you know.
Yeah.
Like the rural setting definitely made it scary. I think the build in that movie is ridiculously scary because, I mean, it just starts getting scarier and scarier scarier as it goes along. And the family dynamic. I mean, I loved those characters.
Sure.
My dad was a minister. And so, you know, the spiritual themes of the movie, I think, too, I just resonated with me. And I really can't say anything bad about that movie. Every time I watch it, I get it scares me, it affects me, and it makes me, it also gets me emotionally too.
And there's not a lot of thinking about it, like jump scares. I mean, it's really like, you know, when the daughter wakes up the dad, and he looks out the window, and
oh gosh,
that's I don't know. I don't consider that a jump scare. That's just like a here you go, no, and really, back at you.
Well,
know what I mean?
You know what though? Because you hear the violin go, you can say that's a jump scare because of that. Because they show it, then they get that little extra violin screech just to kind of give you the kick.
Yeah, they do.
But it's a good jump scare, not a bad jump scare. Like, oh my gosh, I'm expecting the killer, but it's Paul.
You're never gonna get like, you know,
bait and switch.
The cat, you know, it's just the cat, you know, that kind of thing.
I want to add too. One thing I love about signs is like they have a score, but there's also like an absence of sound. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, if you're walking through the cornfield, you're not hearing this dun 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 dun. You're hearing the stepping of the corn breaking under the feet. You're hearing the wind. You're hearing the chimes. Yeah,
the sound design and shit on that was incredible.
And then
you hear the
score come in, but only when the tension's rising. But it's usually just like sound of walking or footfall, and that's just scary. The lack of like you feel like you're not in a movie, but you're in a place.
Yeah, and what I think that does a great job with too, that so many movies fail at, is they really make you feel like this is a worldwide problem, that like that things are going bad, you know, everywhere. You're just seeing this little part right here, but I mean, just the little snippets that you get like on the news and the outside, like it just raises the tension globally. It's telling a story about the entire planet, but you know, you're still focused on this one family.
They're selling it on this one property, and you're buying it, right? So. That was incredible. And another moment with the home video at the party. And again, that's not necessarily a scare. The freaky part is when they pause it and he kind
of
turns.
Get out of the way, children. Get out of the way. Oh, I love that. I love it.
So,
and they're holding the mic and they're like, hold it higher, hold it higher. Right. You hear that.
That was a good build.
I'm just like, oh my gosh.
That was a good,
give me the chills, man. Such a creepy movie.
The creature design on that was spectacular too. And they jawsed it up, man.
They jawsed it up.
Like, they did not reveal anything until they had to.
And Jaws is a great movie, so it makes sense. He had to take an inspiration from Jaws, because that's just such an amazing movie. And
my
you don't see the monster until the end. Dude,
Jaws.
One of mine, definitely.
Yeah, it's all-time favorite. Number one. No question.
Schmal, you son of a bitch. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So sick.
I think, like we were talking about earlier, how Shyamalan gets compared to Rod Serling for the Twilight Zone line. And initially because of the twist. Like, he's known as sort of our modern Rod Serling because of the twist ending. But, you know, like, what makes the Twilight Zone famous is not just the twist endings, because they did have a number of twist endings on Twilight Zone, but not every Twilight Zone had a twist ending, you know? But they all had, like, moralities. They all were telling you something. They were all about something. They weren't just sort of throwaway. And, you know, Shyamalan, at his best, makes movies that do have something to say. Maybe it's not the something that the audience is particularly interested in hearing, but like he doesn't, you know, censor himself for his audiences. He doesn't hold back. He makes the movies he wants to make.
Sure. The Visit. Did you guys like that one?
That was a little sneaky
good. I enjoyed that one.
I have a hard time with it because I enjoyed it. And when the twist came, I enjoyed it. But I don't know, it's just one of those movies where it's really good and there's nothing wrong with it, but I just don't really care for it.
Okay.
And I don't get it.
Do you think it's the genre?
I don't know what it is. It's one of those movies that it doesn't give a... Like, I love the ending, and it's like, that's great. And I can probably watch it again and be like, oh, yes, let's watch it.
Yeah.
But it's not a movie that I'm like, oh my gosh, it just didn't connect, even though it was well made. It was a good movie, but it just didn't connect with me.
A lot of people express that about the found footage genre, you know, that like they like it, they appreciate it, the story and everything, but that somehow that it gives a distance and they don't emotionally connect the same way that they would with, you know, a differently structured story. In a way, I see found footage as being sort of like first person movie making, you know what I mean? And then like your standard traditional is like third person filmmaking, you know? And so I think, a lot of times the voice that a movie's written in can kind of affect whether you connect with it or not.
Well, you know, that wasn't really an issue for me because I did enjoy Quarantine, and then the Wreck, I enjoyed that too, you know. So I enjoyed, it wasn't that, it just somehow didn't connect with me on any level. Like, I felt like I was in a car passing by someone's house, seeing someone wave at me, I just couldn't connect. Like, and it wasn't the way it was shot, it just didn't resonate with me.
I felt that way about The Village. It didn't blow me away. It wasn't awful, but
The Village, what I love most of The Village, for me the problem with The Village was that I figured out the twist early.
Did you?
Yeah.
Very nice.
I saw it opening day in the theater, and I would say within the first third of the movie, I knew the twist was.
It's modern times is what you got.
I knew.
What gave you the clues to that?
I can't even tell you, other than the fact that I think it's just that I've seen so damn much of this stuff, and I've read so many okay. of these stories, that, like, it was just... I think for me what it was is that there were too many things that were non-specific mm-hmm. in the time period that it became specific.
Mm.
They were going out of their way so much to make it a sort of generalized ideal of the American past that I was like, wait okay. a minute, this isn't really happening in any particular time period. And so as I started to question of the time period the movie was set in, I was just like, oh, it has to be. It's a modern story.
Well, when I was watching, I do remember saying, okay, well, those monsters, whatever they're showing, don't scare me, so it has to be something else. But I didn't guess it was modern times.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That said, I think that the central message about, like, the paranoia and the, you know, mm-hmm. the destruction that can happen to a community
right.
based, you know, that turns entirely on itself, that holds true. And in that sense, I think it's one of his most powerful movies, because, you know, that message lasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It was good.
I read a thing with him just before he was getting ready to shoot Lady in the Water. And he said the guys that he met up with, whoever, the studio, the producers, mm-hmm. they had dinner, right? And he said that he just felt that they were kind of going to detach themselves from him. You know, they were like, hey, we'll give you a call on this one. And and he went his own way and did Lady in the Water, which
mm-hmm.
didn't blow me away, but I don't know.
The thing is, they marketed it as a horror film, and he was telling them it wasn't.
Like more fantasy.
So, yeah, so it was a fantasy film, and it was marketed that way. So, I mean, understandably, you know, you think you're going to see a horror movie, and you're watching a movie that isn't like that, you're going to have an issue with it.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it just wasn't very good.
Well, and it's tough, too, because I think he does make movies that often are sort of outside genre. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like The Sixth Sense... It's not really a horror movie.
It's not.
It's a relationship drama where one of the people just happens to be a ghost.
Yeah.
You know? His movies, for me, aren't always genre, you know? And that's what I really like about him as a filmmaker, is that he tends to take things that we think of as genre and then makes a twist on them that makes them his own thing. And I'll be honest with you, we would not have the modern cinematic universes that we have without Unbreakable.
I mean,
that's
100%. You know, couldn't agree more.
Right. You can't like look at the modern like superhero movie without it owing in some way to Unbreakable, because that was the first movie that made you think, oh yeah, this could really happen.
Yeah, you know, and it's tough, I think, for him, because he does his twist things and to kind of top what he's done previously. So he's, you know, and that takes balls to go in there and do that, you know? I mean, they're not all going to hit, you know, but I think he's back.
Oh, definitely.
Now, I mean.
And, you know, seeing Glass, after seeing Glass, I feel like I'm starting to feel superhero fatigue. Like, you know, like you see in the trailer of Glass, you see Bruce Willis bending that metal pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really exciting that really, like, resonates with me, seeing a person do something they shouldn't be able to do. And it's to the point that there's so much superheroes with fancy costumes, shiny shields, intergalactic villains. I'm just kind of sick of it. And I'm looking forward to when cinema starts fading out of this whole superhero genre and kind of gets back to grounded films. Because I have enjoyed it, but I'm kind of done.
Well, like, I think it happened in the comic book world with, you know, in the 90s, you know, everything sort of went, like, the joke was, like, everything's extreme, you know?
Yeah.
And then you ended up with, like, the crazy pecs. Heroes with, like, the, you know, the anatomy that didn't quite match, and everything had pockets and straps and all that stuff like that. And, yeah, these cycles happen where, like, people... you know, will sort of push things to the extreme and, you know, everybody loses interest and, you know, but there was, you know, there's still a lot of great art being made, you know, throughout this time. There's still a lot of really cool movies that are still being made. They don't get the attention that the hero movies do necessarily, but over time, I think these things are going to mm-hmm. develop an audience.
Yeah.
Right. I think I talked about this on the last podcast, but I thoroughly, really enjoyed Get Out.
Yes.
Like that?
Yes.
Gosh, that guy, Peele, right?
Yeah.
Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele, that new movie, Us, just with that whole score of that 90s rap song.
I've seen
it. Look at the trailer. His stuff is awesome. I feel like he's really going to make a splash, and I feel like he's going to become... I mean, you're talking about genre directors. I think he's definitely going to be a genre director and then branch out even further.
Yeah.
Because he's so talented, and Get Out was so well done. It was just so great.
You just felt so secluded while watching that movie. Like, wow, man.
And one of the things I really liked about it is just how surreal it became. You know, like, you know, the whole moment, you know, with the sunken place where how became so visually surreal. It reminded me a lot of David Lynch in, but, you know, in a way that's far more commercial. Right. And, you know, the term that gets tossed around right now amongst, you know, the, you know, in the journals and magazines and online is elevated horror. You know, the elevated horror is the big thing. It came out, you know, when you had movies like The Babadook and Get Out and It Follows, you know, movies that, you know, were beyond just, you know, telling a simple like slasher story or something like that, you know, that it has something to say beyond, you know, the thing. I don't really like that label as much because it implies that horror itself is like, you know, that's just horror, you know. That wasn't good enough for us anymore. We have elevated horror now.
Right, I totally agree.
But I think there is a whole new wave of people who have a lot more interesting things to say, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. I mean, you know, what's scary to me, we've got tons of movies that have explored what's scary, you know, to me, but, you know, what's scary to someone else, maybe who hasn't been represented as much, you know, that you're going to get a whole different set of movies and new iconography and new villains. And I can't wait. I like you said, how you're waiting for the superhero thing to blow over. Yeah, it will. But, you know, in the meantime, we're also going to be seeing like a hybridization of all sorts of things, and they're all going to mix together and make
like the next step in the evolution.
Yeah, they're going to make things that we haven't seen before.
In Get Out,
yeah,
his facial expressions to his reactions to what's around him by just saying nothing were incredible. Gosh. You know what I mean? And I thought that carried a lot of it. Like, just we're kind of feeling what he's feeling. Like, damn, what the hell's going on over here?
Yeah,
what's with this maid?
And a lot of movies don't, like, trust their characters that much to, like, let them breathe and react to what's good to the world around them.
De Niro says sometimes you don't even have to do anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just be it. You know what I mean? You don't have to sit there and, you know, cry and drop tears. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But sometimes less is more, you know? Mm-hmm. And Denzel is one of the best at that, I think, saying the most without saying anything.
Well, I do want to say, and this is completely, like, out of the horror genre, but Tom Hardy is Bane. Like, he had his face covered the majority of the time, and he was constantly a presence. And even when he made her, it was just enough. You know what I mean? Right. He just emoted so much while not being able to see the majority of his face.
I'm a little minority here, too. The last Venom movie that he was in.
I didn't see it.
That was great.
I consider that more of a possession movie in a way than I consider it to be a superhero movie,
like a mutual possession.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's he's making friends with his inner demon there,
and they kind of meet up.
But I mean, so you're starting to see some of these lines blur already. You're seeing, like, that was sort of the first, like, sort of superhero horror movie.
Yeah, definitely. You know? And it was well done. I really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, very much.
And Tom Hardy, of course. I love that guy. Amazing actor. Always delivers. Ooh. Earthquake.
Tom Hardy delivering.
He heard us. His power got sent over here. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah. We were talking about Lost Boys earlier.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I kind of wanted Jamie Gertz's character, Star, was she not a vampire yet or half a vampire?
Okay, what
was
this is what I think.
Was she bait?
I think that she wasn't a fully fledged vampire. Remember how Michael needed initiation? Mm-hmm. Remember, you know what we are, now you know what you are? I think that was the same thing, and Michael was going to be her initiation. That's what I truly believe.
But she fell for him.
Yeah, right? And then, you know, he never completely... They're both halflings, and it just never happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I could support that. I mean, you know, vampire rules sort of shift hard and fast.
Sure, yeah.
You know, one of the... Another movie, contemporary, you know, with Lost Boys, Near Dark, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You had, you know, you in there, you know, they solved vampirism through blood transfusions, you know? And so, you know, they're... It's funny, the rules of, like, when you become the monster and, you know, when you aren't the monster, what's neat about those movies in the 80s is that there was no sort of hard and fast rule. Right. There's not that moment where, like, you turn and suddenly you turn to the camera and you've got the contact. And then,
Or even, like Interview with the Vampire, where they have to give you their blood in order to turn you. Otherwise, you just become a dead corpse.
Yeah, the idea that it's a process. You know? Right. And I think From Dusk Till Dawn sort of played with that, too, you know, because you had the Harvey Keitel fighting off, you know, turning into the vampire the whole way, too. And to me, like, that's an interesting struggle, like that period where you're not sure what you are yet. Are you human? Are you monster? I think like Nick Cage, that Vampire's Kiss is really one of the only movies that sort of, it's crazy.
Nick Cage is amazing. I love that guy.
And it explores that whole, you know, like period of like, well, maybe he just thinks he's a vampire.
Yeah, and he's wearing the plastic fangs. Yeah.
And so, you know what? I think that's cool. Like, I never really considered that even in Lost Boy. That was something that sort of flew by me because of, you've got so many other cool things going on here. The visual spectacle of Lost Boys. I mean,
you want to be one of them. Like,
I don't think. I don't.
Like, I'll join.
I don't think that 80s horror ever like looked as good as it did in Lost Boys.
I mean, they have mullets and peacoats, and it's just so badass. Like, I'm like, hey, you know what? I'll date the girl and I'll join the club. Like, I'm cool. I'll drink the blood of the wine. Like, it's just so cool.
Do I get a motorcycle? Yeah, do I have to bring my own?
Do I get my own earring? Like, come on.
Yeah, that's good.
And I mean, Keith Versalda looks like the coolest villain. Like, he looks like a guy you'd want to hang out with and like just be, maybe go to the gym with and go on a hike with, you know, and then be cool with. Yeah, I mean, just, he's a cool dude, man.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of 30 Days a Night?
I was gonna mention that right now.
I love that.
I interviewed Steve Niles, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll send you the link. It was amazing, and I loved it. Did you guys read the comic?
Yes.
Okay, so I love that it was true to the comic. I mean, minus the stranger, which he got the short end of the stick. But Ben Foster did a great job. But it was amazing. I loved it. It was just, it was pure. It was just pure predatory, instinctual. There's nothing pretty about it. It's just about satiating a need, and that's what they were about, and that's what was great about it.
Sure.
And talk about high concept, man. I mean, you can't beat that concept. You know, it's like, so it's a story about vampires in a town where the sun never goes down. Okay, sold.
Yeah, that was interesting. I saw some of the making of that and how they went and built that town.
Oh, yeah.
They scouted it out. And very fun. Looked very fun to be part of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's cool to see so many of those things that are, you know, built. They're actual, you know, practical, like a place you go. It's not a soundstage, you know.
Right.
It's a place that they built. Like, the thing, man. The thing.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is perfect.
One of those crazy movies.
In that thing. Like, you know, you've got this outpost. Wow, you've got this outpost in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, they were in an outpost in the middle of nowhere.
Shit's going
to
happen.
You know Raimi purchased the rights to 30 Days a Night? When I was talking to Niles, he was telling me that they wanted to make it this splatterific, gory film. And when Raimi purchased the rights, he knew it was in good hands. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because you could see how it's, you know, ultra-violent, but done in a fun way. You know, kind of a la Evil Dead. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, good stuff. Another one of my favorites is What Lies Beneath Zemeckis.
What Lies Beneath?
Yeah,
that's Michelle Pfeiffer, Harrison Ford.
Where his wife is dead. And
Well, the girlfriend. Well, he's got the girlfriend on the side, and they don't show her, but 6 seconds, I think, in the movie, something like that. I forgot. It was something ridiculous, but what a buildup! And
I need to see that again. He
wanted to shoot that how he thought Hitchcock would shoot it. You know.
Yeah.
And
was that the movie that he shot in the middle of
Castaway?
Castaway.
Sure. Yeah. Sent off. They quit for a year. Well, yeah, shot some of Castaway. Went to do that one, came back.
Shot the rest of Castaway, yeah. So, like, really, this was just a fill-in project for him, but I think it's certainly one of his, like, I don't think it ever really gets quite enough love as being, like, a genre film, but, man, it's a good ghost story.
I think I saw it once in theaters when I was probably about 8 or 9, and I haven't seen it since, so I need to revisit it.
Zemeckis is just one of those, like, really interesting artists. I know that, like, you know, his new movie not being well received. I haven't seen it
myself. Looks interesting.
Return to Marwen Welcome to Marwen, I believe.
Oh, that's right, the Steve Carell one with the miniatures.
Correct.
Yeah.
It sounds at least interesting.
It looks interesting.
Like, you know, but, man, some of the stuff that he used to do, I mean, even outside of Back to the Future,
Back to the Future.
He's just like such a great storyteller.
Pole Express, one of my favorites.
Never seen it.
Yeah.
Castaway is just a brilliant movie. I love the ending of that movie is just phenomenal. I can't think of a better ending for
at the four corners
than Castaway, which drove audiences at the time crazy. They hated the ambiguity of that ending. But like for me, that was just the brilliant part of the thing.
Yeah.
It felt like someone had thrown a sort of like a European art house ending onto an end of an American movie.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily a happy ending. It wasn't a sad ending. It was just the end, you know,
and
he had freaking four ways to go. It was just, it was sad, man, when he went back to visit Helen Hunt and she was remarried, you know, and That was rough. I saw Robert Zemeckis and his wife at a restaurant when I was in Montecito, man. I was probably 20 feet from him, man. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to bug him, but I do. I didn't. But he was just right there eating. I just wanted to go talk to him about some shit, you know. But
fun Bob Zemeckis story, what I heard from one of my teachers in film school. So he went to USC.
Okay.
For his thesis project, they were given a certain amount of film to shoot with. And half of his roles got completely spoiled. They got exposed to light, blown out.
Oh, man.
So he shot the rest of the thing exactly as it was, like, storyboarded out pretty much to the frame on the amount of film that he had left with, like, a 1-to-1 shooting ratio.
Damn.
Like,
wow.
To me, that's just insane.
So, what'd you guys think of Jaws?
Amazing, one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah.
Okay, you watch like The Meg, right?
Oh yeah.
And they did a good
job.
That one. Yeah, it was good. It was fun. The thing is, like, I mean, when you think about getting in the water, you think about the great white shark. Mm-hmm. And to the point that I would go swimming as a kid, I was doing swim meets, and I'd be afraid because I'd be behind the pack because I couldn't keep up.
Right.
Then I'd start trying to swim faster, and I'd start taking in water because I was getting afraid of Jaws. And what's great, it's just the ultimate stalker film, where you don't see the monster until the end, and when it finally all comes to the climax, it's just so well done and scary and exciting. Like with a chomp, it's just an awesome movie, man. Yeah. It still holds up, even with the mechanical shark. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's just a masterpiece of editing, for one thing.
Sure.
It's one of the best edited movies ever. You know, what the scene that always comes back to me is, you know, the scene on the beach where everybody is, you know, the first attack there at the beach, you know, and you've got, you know, everybody's looking around, they're panicked, and the camera goes this way, you know, and the camera goes this way, and you've got that terrific, like, dolly zoom moment, you know, where, I mean, you just, it's put together so well that, you know, you just don't even... It's almost like it's put together so well that it becomes invisible of how good the artistry is behind it.
Yeah.
And you just get so focused in on that story. Every time I get pulled into the story, I get pulled into the, you know, the sheriff trying to save the town. You know, it's funny because it's like a Western.
Yeah.
But it's set on the East Coast, you know, but it's very much a Western of, like, you know, there's this threat to the town. The sheriff's got to, you know, rally the town around it and, you know, fight off the thing. And, oh, I can't say enough good things about Jaws. The score.
Oh my gosh, the score's iconic.
You cannot hear those two notes without, you know, thinking Jaws. I mean, two notes.
Kind of like the Psycho score. It stays with you forever.
Exactly. And one of the things that's also great about Jaws, too, is just how just effortless it feels. You know, as amazing as the artistry is behind it and how hard they work to make it look like that, it just doesn't feel like work when you're watching it, even in the midst of those incredible oneers, you know, like the one out on the ferry, you know, that just goes where the scene just goes on and on, like far past what you would normally expect in a cut, you know, but they'll play out and they're just organic. And, you know, the way the sound of the town, you know, or the sound of the ocean comes working its way into the soundtrack. You know, it's just, it puts you in that place, and that place is terrifying.
If they're splicing film back then, I think it was it Verna Fields?
Yes.
How do they match an audio back then? How do you do that?
Okay.
I got a computer, a Mac here.
I used to do this back in film school in the day. Right. What you do is you've got a blip, you know, sort of, you know the moment you've got like your slight clap and stuff like that. Well, you that shows up as like a blip when you're playing back the magnetic tape. And so what you would do is you would find your little moment where it syncs up and listen for that blip, and you put it right there, and you match it together, and if everything's synced properly, you know, then your audio matches your film.
It's amazing,
but
man.
Yeah, but it's quite a process. And, you know, one of the things that people don't understand now is, you know, editing back in the day was an extremely big department. It wasn't one person sitting at a computer making cuts. You had your principal editor there, you know, making the cuts, but then you also had your assistants who were lining up the next shots and getting things together. And you had runners who would have to run down to get the footage from the warehouse and bring it in because, you know, everything was on reels. And you just had this huge ecosystem set up to make things flow. And that workflow and group of people is something I think that gets lost in modern filmmaking. You no longer have now it is just one person on a computer. You're getting a sort of a more individualized point of view, but at the same time you miss out sort of the collective point of view, because I feel like there were more eyes on the product being made back in the day. So, you know, you had more input. There was a lot more input from the creative team on what was going on.
Sure.
You know, as it was being made versus now when a lot of that input comes in post.
Yeah.
It's fixed in CG.
Yeah. In September, I don't know if I spoke about this on the last podcast, but I went to Martha's Vineyard and visited a few of those sites. I'll lay it in the finished product here so you can see. But lots changed. You know, Brody's house is totally different, but, you know, it still stands. And the ferry, got to ride that.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
Yeah, awesome. Same thing. You know what I mean? Same shit. You just get on it.
Do they still have the same mayor? And does he now believe that they have
the same fucking insurance? Yeah, no shit. The town looks somewhat the same. But like I said, the house and some of the other things around there, a little bit changed. I didn't get to everything, you know, because of some of the stuff was kind of far away. But it's very interesting, man, to go back and look at these locations years and years after, you know.
Did you go in the water?
No.
Would you have gone in the water after seeing that movie? Like, would you go in the areas where the attack happened?
I don't know, man. I don't really get in the water now, so anyway. But
I wouldn't be able to. Yeah. That'd be like nightmares coming true.
Right. I would. And you know, to be fair, I mean, sharks are extremely docile creatures underwater. And, you know, I'm a diver, too. And oh, wow. So one of the things that I, you know, when I, particularly in tropical waters, I love to go diving and, you know, you'll see sharks and they're just, you know, hanging out there, happy creatures. But that movie is so good at getting into your head that this thing is a killing machine that you do have that moment, you know, where you see it and you're like, I don't know. But then, you know, then after a while, you're able to let it go and treat it for what it is. So not all sharks are killing machines.
But, you know, I've heard, I was watching a documentary where they're talking about how sharks, they tend to feel with their mouth, you know? And I understand they're not all killing machines, but the problem is if a great white decides to feel with your mouth on your arm, you're not going to have an arm anymore. So I'd rather just not be in that situation just to avoid it, like, you know? Because I don't want, like, you know, a bullhead shark to, like, figure out what my hand is with its mouth, and then, you know, I have just a wrist, you know? So it's just, it's pretty scary still.
One of the things that, you know, always gets talked about too is the design of the shark, you know. Famously the shark, you know, didn't work the way they wanted it to, which led them having to use less of it in the movie and also intercut with some actual you know, shark footage.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, it's that happy filmmaking accident, you know.
Yeah.
And every now and again you get those. You get those things that, like, at the time they just seem like they're destroying you. Like,
right.
But it ends up being sort of the central part of the movie. That's one of the greatest things about movie making, honestly, those little things that pop up that drive you mad, but, you know, end up working out in the end.
Yeah, that's what made it great, not being able to see the shark. I completely agree.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, fellas. Well, we're going to end that on that movie. Good segue to get out of here. But thanks for showing up and taking the time.
Oh, man. Thanks for having us.
We'll do it again, man. For sure, man.
Love the lair, man. Appreciate the lair.
Great to finally meet you in person, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I've been trying to meet this guy for, like,
a long
years now, and you finally made it happen. So thank you so much for that.
That's good, man. And hopefully we'll do it again.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Absolutely.
Take care.